Hey everybody, it's your friends, Brad and Dave.
And we're just dropping into your feed to tell you about a special offer this month.
Here's the special offer. Join us on Patreon at the $5 level and you'll get
an exclusive episode of Drunk Comic Lab.
It's a Patreon-only hour of us talking comics while suitably soused.
Oh, you will regret missing this. Brad is a delight.
And when you join, you'll also get an ebook of how to make web comics.
That's right. This is our how-to book on web cartooning that's now gone through 4 successful printings at Image Comics.
And when you join us on Patreon, you'll also get an ebook of the Webcomics Handbook.
So now that's 2 ebooks you're getting. This one with over 200 pages of actionable advice and how-tos that you can apply to your cartooning today.
So that's the scoop. Join us before Thanksgiving,
November 28th.
And get 2 free ebooks plus the exclusive episode of Drunk Comic Lab.
Gang, you already know you love the show, and here is your chance to join us on Patreon and get 3 cool freebies.
And if you're already at the $5 level or higher, all you gotta do is stick around. You'll get your reward on the 29th.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics. Today is Thanksgiving here in the United States, the day of thanks, the thanks of giving, the giving of thanks.
And, the thanks of giving, I like that.
The thanks of giving. So I got to ask you, because I have experienced this in weird permutations over the years. When you go home for Thanksgiving and you are explaining what you do to cousins, do they get it? Is there a cousin that's like, I have no idea what Brad does for a living?
No, I think most of them don't understand what I do for a living. The best story I've got from that was a couple of years back. I was home for my niece's high school graduation, and Uncle Elmer comes over. Uncle Elmer is now a retired farmer, really sweet guy. But he comes over to me and he says, "So,
well, hold on. For context, can I pause you for a second? What is Elmer farm? What is he? What is he?
He was primarily a dairy farmer. Was like one of the last of the like small family owned. I don't know last, but you know you don't see a whole lot of them across the American landscape anymore.
It's all those mega dairy farms.
But he had a certain number of cattle, and he took care of every day. He day in and day out did that, along with he planted crops partially to feed the cattle and partially crops to sell. So he was like a classic farmer. He had dairy. He had he may have raised some for beef, although I'm not sure. And then he did a lot of agriculture in terms of planting and reaping. So he did it all.
As a dairy farmer, did he always kind of have a scent to him?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's something.
Like even on his Sunday best, going to church, he'd be like, "Oh, Uncle Elmer, yeah, there he is. He's behind me."
You can shower for hours, and you will not get that smell off of you. That just got to wear off. it's going nowhere, and really, it gets in your hair. So you can shampoo and shampoo and shampoo and be truly the cleanest person, and you're just not going to avoid that smell. It permeates.
Yeah. Okay, so I've now completely... Okay, so now we have a picture of Uncle Elmer.
and a scent.
and a scent of Uncle Elmer, yeah. I think I have the whiff of the man.
Yeah, you've got a sense of the man. But...
it's the comic lab this week, everybody. We'll see you next week.
No more show. We can't do better than that. He comes over to me and he says, "So are you still doing comics for a living? You still do cartoons?" And I says, "Yeah, yeah." He says, "And that's the only thing you do? That's all you do for a living?" And I go, "Yeah, it's my full-time job." And he looks at me and he pauses and he goes, "Well, I guess." and then just walked away. It was, honest to God, Dave, it was the exact same response as if I would have told him, "Yeah, they just found out the tumor is malignant." It's the same kind of response where he goes, "Yeah, well, I guess." Just, you know, that kind of, I don't know what else to say. And then he just kind of wandered away. It was like, without saying the words, he kind of was saying, "I have no way of making conversation with you, and I'm not even going to try."
That's, it's akin to like, All right. So, Elmer, your tractor's broken. It's a $2,000 transmission job. Do you want us to do it? Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't really want to think about it, doesn't really talk about it, but, like, his nephew is a cartoonist. Well, it's bad news, but I guess it has to happen, so all right.
Even worse, it's like if that tractor would have broken down and I would have walked through the field and he would have looked at me and he said, you know, what do you think I should do about this tractor? I would have looked at him and I said, well, I guess. You know, I have as much to say about tractors as he has to say about comics.
So we've determined that in your uncle's eyes, you are a broken down tractor. All right, well, this is good. This is good.
That may be the best metaphor, and out of all the metaphors, maybe one of the kindest metaphors that you could come up with.
What, like, has Elmer ever asked you how a dollar ever actually enters your hands? Like, do you make a book, or what do you do?
It's never ever gotten that far. Like you'd have to have a conversation to get that far. It's like there's just no even entry to a conversation for that.
I love that later on in the day, he's like hooking Mabel up to the milking machine. He's like just talking to Mabel about it. Like he's getting out his feelings. He's like, I don't know about that boy. I mean, he just drives all day. What kind of a skill is that? If the apocalypse comes, how is he going to make a living? People aren't going to buy cartoons in the apocalypse. They still need cow milk though, Mabel.
Yeah. Well, when I say he probably wouldn't appreciate me saying he's a sweet guy, but he really is one of those classic. He's got a very hard exterior, but you get the sense that he's got a really good heart. My other favorite story is when he was thinking about selling off and retiring, he was having a real hard time with that decision. And I was talking to my mom and I said, why is he? I mean, he's at the point he's going to get a good sell off for the livestock. He's going to be able to retire real well. What's the problem? He says, well, Brad, he knows all those cows by name.
Oh, God, I can see that.
And it's like, I immediately smirked and said, well, they don't really have names. But then you realize he had birthed those cows, each one of them.
Yeah.
And then when they got old enough to have calves, he birthed those cows and brought each one of them into the world and gave them each a name and cared for them every day. Be the last person to admit it, but he's got a hell of a good heart.
Yeah, and just the idea, too, that if you're up at 4 a.m. and you go to bed at 8 p.m. and you're with them all day long, you're damn straight they all have names. I would give them all names. Yeah. I'd be like, you're Murgatroyd, you're Skippy, you're Scoot-Dooter. You know,
I would love to see Dave Kellett, the dairy farmer. Those names would, hey, you'd be out there calling him in for milking. Hey, Scoot Dooter. Hey, Lippity Doo. Hey there, Chucky Wookies.
Hey, Goodle Goodly. You know,
all the other farmers are plotting your demise. We got to do something about Farmer Kellett. If we got one more, if I got to listen to him yelling out his window, hey, whippity duties. I'm going to go
so
nuts.
So, Brad, I don't know that I've ever told you the story, but my uncle, my father's twin, is also a farmer in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Yeah. Have I ever told you this story? So he turns to my dad, his twin. He goes, hey, I'm going to teach your boy something. Can he come with me? And my dad goes, yeah, sure. Take him. I don't know. And so he goes, follow me down to the barn. And I go, oh, what are we going to go do? And he goes, we're going to go neuter a steer. And I go, I don't want to be involved with this.
Holy
and
moly.
Brad, he had this gigantic beast of an animal, right? To the point where it is chained up on all four sides to each side of the barn. And maybe no one wants to hear this story. Why am I telling this story? But it reinforces how I was not meant to be a farmer. Anyway, he's got the animal all chained up, and the way they do it to sterilize them is they take basically a massive industrial rubber band, and they basically go whoop, and they cut off the blood circulation, and then nature takes its course over the course of the next 2 weeks. Right? No one wants to hear this story. I'm sorry, everybody, but here's my story for it: is that Brave Dave, the boy who was born to be a farmer. This thing, the rubber band hits this bull in the business, and the whole barn starts shaking, Brad. This bull is bucking back and forth, because who wouldn't be bucking back and forth?
Yeah, no shit.
This rubber band has a death grip on his business, And the bull is like, I felt like the barn was going to come down on me. So I take off running. And I run back up to the house. And my dad goes, hey, how'd it go? I guess not great. Well, you're not meant to be a farmer.
Well, not only, how old were you?
10 or 11, just old
well,
enough
yeah,
to know what was going on.
At 10 or 11, I no wonder you were scared. Who knows? He might have other smaller rubber bands. This guy is not to be trusted.
In my mind, I'm just like, if he can do that to a bull, I better
yeah,
run.
No kidding.
Well, on that clinching note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, the no bull editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And snap that rubber band, I'm your friend Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. But before we do, because it is Thanksgiving today, we have hours left in the special offer to join us over at patreon.com/comiclab. So I want to remind everybody why you want to come join us at the $5 level. So
yeah.
Normally, when you join us at $5 level, you not only get the shows early on the custom RSS feed that you can plug into your podcast app, you get mm-hmm. something like 30, maybe 35 bonus hours of exclusive podcasts that we've recorded just for patrons. You get to submit a question to the show, which is both makes the show more fun for us and makes it more immediately helpful to you in your own journey. And
yeah.
then now, if you join today, you get a free ebook of How to Make Webcomics, our fourth printing image comics book, which has been a gangbusters for people over the course of that book's life. And
yeah.
then How to Make Webcomics, which has, or, sorry, not How to Make Webcomics, an ebook of the Webcomics Handbook, which has over 200 pages of actionable advice that you can apply to your cartooning and the business of your cartooning. And then, Brad, what's the final coup de grace?
The final coup de grace, we're going back to that idea we had a little while back. We're going to do Drunk Comic Lab. You and I are going to fill up a glass with our favorite tasty adult beverage. And just instead of doing advice and tutorials like we usually do on Comic Lab, we're just going to sit back and as if by the fireplace and share some stories and talk about the last 20 years in webcomics and just tell stories from our lives as cartoonists and enjoy a little camaraderie. So we did it a couple of years back and it was a fantastic show. It was an exclusive show. You can still get it on Patreon and find it no place else. And this will be yet another exclusive Drunk Comic Lab just for you.
And this, as a reminder, you can only snag it within hours left. So if you're
yeah.
listening to this on Thanksgiving Day, pause the show, run over to patreon.com/comiclab, join us for $5. And listen,
yeah.
I think when you join, you're going to love it, but you could conceivably just join for the month. But I know
sure.
with all the stuff we have, all the bonus actionable stuff you can apply to your career, you're going to love being over on patreon.com/comiclab with us. But go do it today because today is the last day for that special offer, Bradley J.
Yeah, and like I tell my own Patreon backers, you can cancel at any time, but I'm going to be working like hell to make things happen on Patreon that make it really hard for you to make that decision.
Exactly. Well, so today, Brad, to lead off the show, because I went just this past weekend, I wanted to talk about Patreon Assembly. Now,
gosh.
For those that have been listening to Comic Lab for more than a year, you remember that Brad flew out last year, stayed with me. Mm-hmm. We went with Dave Malky. We went with other cartoonists, Keith Knight and others, to PatreCon, which was a different concept, and
yeah.
loved it. Had a great time. Learned a ton of actionable items that we actually ended up sharing on Comic Lab on our Discord server because
yeah.
it was such an effective 2-3 day event. And so I was, frankly, Brad, heading into this a little bit disappointed because Patreon Assembly had changed formats. What it was going to be was a series of talks simulcast to different meetups around the country. So there was one
yeah.
in Seattle, one in Brooklyn, one in Los Angeles, one in Chicago, and there was another one that I'm not remembering where, maybe Portland. But the idea was you would go, you would get together with a bunch of other Patreon artists, and you would watch these simulcast talks, and then you would have meetups and small groups and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I, Brad, wasn't excited going into it, and I had the same attitude coming out of it because I'll tell you why. They hired A-list celebrities to come do the talks. Mm-hmm. And here is my fundamental critique, Brad, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, is that when you go to a Patreon event, what you're wanting to learn is how to best implement, use, and activate your patron fan base and get people to sign up, get people to stay, get people to get super involved, get people to maybe bump up a level, whatever that is. To me, that is the core idea, the organizing theory of what a Patreon event should be. Whereas this felt like a series of A-listers giving so-so inspirational talks about being an artist, which,
yeah,
don't get me wrong, there is a place in the world for inspirational talk about being an artist. Brad and I do that on Comic Lab from time to time, too. But I feel like, Brad, the world is awash in TED Talks of like, you can be an artist, you can chase those dreams, fire up your heart and food, everybody!
I'm Susan McTaggart, and I'm here to tell you, if you can dream it, you can do it.
Yeah, I should have done Susan McTaggart. Right. Hi, everybody, Susan McTaggart here. Remember my motto, the dreams that you make today are the dreams you sleep on tomorrow. So, I don't know. But so I came away, frankly, disappointed because I want you to course correct me if I'm wrong here, Brad, because I feel like you have to know what you are. You have to know what your job is in this world. And I feel like an organizer of a Patreon event, it felt to me like they wanted to say, hey, look who we can hire. Look who we can bring in. We got Patton Oswalt. We got Whitney Cummings. We got Paul Scheer, all of whom are incredibly talented. Don't get me wrong. I love all three of them in different ways. To me, I want to hear from someone who's 1, 2, 3 levels ahead of me. I don't necessarily want to hear from someone who's 48 levels ahead of me because their advice. Go ahead.
And 48 levels ahead of you on a different track. In other words, Patton Oswalt is a fantastic comedian. He doesn't have a Patreon. He may have just found out about Patreon recently. You know, same with Whitney Cummings. I don't think she's got a Patreon. In other words, a lot of the that happened a little bit last year too at PatreCon. Their keynote speaker came up and said, "Well, imagine my surprise when I found out there was something called Patreon." You know, it was like, "Get off the stage!" You said it so well when you said, "I want to hear from somebody who's about 3 steps ahead of me on Patreon. I want to hear what their philosophy." I want to hear what they're doing. More importantly, I want to hear why they're doing it, and I want to hear how it's working out. The inspirational stuff, I said, and we said this after PatreCon last year, there were some people who got up and said, I've got a YouTube with 23 million followers, and sometimes I can't feel happy. And it's like, okay, that's not for me. I guess there's somebody who's getting something out of that, and it's okay that that's there, because not everything has to be for me.
Right.
But for my taste, I want there to be a lot less quote unquote inspirational. And I want to talk about why that inspirational isn't really inspirational. But quote unquote less inspirational, more instructional. I want to hear from somebody what they're doing.
Instructional is the word. Yes, Brad. Good job. Sorry. Keep going.
Yeah. And that's why, like, the Try Guys that got up there, these guys that do viral videos. And I'll be the first to admit, they walked out there on a stage, and I was ready to hate them with a white-hot passion. I'm like, look at these guys in their fucking skinny jeans. Get off the stage. What can they possibly? I got so much out of them that I learned from and use to this day and quote on the show. They were great. I was so happy to be completely wrong about those guys. And there was a bunch of people that was like that.
Amanda Palmer, one of the representatives from her team was also incredibly helpful, because it was actionable advice that, like, even though Amanda Palmer considerably higher than we will ever be in terms of fandom, having a member of her team talk about like the 10 actionable things that they do to get and maintain and retain patrons, super helpful, don't you think, Brad?
Absolutely. And that's where, so I feel kind of guilty that you went in the first place, because originally when this was, we were looking at this and they said, we're not going to do PatreCon. We're going to do video live streaming, and there's going to be meetups. So you can go watch TV with a bunch of strangers.
Go watch TV with a bunch of strangers.
Well, what? They give or take an hors d'oeuvre plate. That's what they were doing. And I was like, but I had so much fear of missing out from the last time that I didn't go that I'm like, Dave, I think I'm going to go. I'm going to go. There's one in Brooklyn. I can catch a train over to Manhattan and then a train over to Brooklyn. And I think I'm going to go. And Dave's like, nah, I'm not going to go. Come to a week before, and but for a bunch of reasons, I decided I wasn't going to go. And partially because when it came right down to buying my train tickets and putting the money into a Brooklyn area hotel, which was not going to be cheap, I had to ask myself, do I really think this is going to be worth it?
Yeah.
In other words, what was worth it about Patricon? Okay, they had a lot of instructional presentations, and there was a whole lot of people there that when there was the quote-unquote inspirational stuff, I could walk away and get into a sidebar with Dave Kellett and Keith Knight and Dan, was Danielle there? I'm remembering Danielle there.
I think Danielle was there, yes.
Yeah. I wanted to make sure my memory was accurate before I started name dropping. But and Malky and all these other folks, we could get into a little sidebar and say, okay, you know, let's compare notes. You went to the Reddit thing. I went to the Simplecast thing. I want to hear what you found out over there and Discord and this and that and the next. So it was good. Because when the stuff on the stage wasn't intriguing, you could sidebar and make up your own little panel and say, okay, let's talk about this thing. Or just, you know, maybe just grab a soft drink and chill for a little bit and talk about anything that came up. That made that week and very, very useful to me. And I had to take a look at this, and I looked at the lineup of who they were going to be live streaming, and I had to ask myself, is this going to be worth it? And at the end of the day, I said no. And not only that, it's gonna be. I looked at the logistics of getting out to Brooklyn and the cost. And when you factor in that I would have been staying on Kellett's couch, it would have been easier and cheaper for me to fly to Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's
plus,
true.
I found out that's Trump true. Trump was at Madison Garden that day. So, of course, that's where the train would have come right into. So now on the day I'm trying to get to Patricon or not Patreon Assembly, I would have been coming into Madison Square Garden, dealing with whatever was going on there between protesters, counter-protesters, and secret police, trying to find the right train to Brooklyn, which my sense of direction could have gone any way, and then dealing with a hotel. I would have been fit to be tied by the time I got there. So of course, I have a little FOMO the night before. Carolyn and I had date night, and we're sitting there, and I'm like, she goes, if you want to go, you can go. I'm not going to, you know, I will make it happen. I'm like, nah, I think I'm going to put a fork in this. It's done. And the next day I was looking at the Twitter hashtags for Patreon Assembly and Brooklyn. And there was, I, by the way, if anybody, please, was at the Patreon Assembly in Brooklyn, please get in touch. I want to know all about it, particularly if there were artists or not safe for work comics people, because that's really what I was scared of missing out on networking. But there was three tweets, Dave, and one of them was somebody announcing that she was going to be teaching a chair yoga class at Patreon Assembly Brooklyn. And I read that out loud, chair yoga, to my wife, and she started laughing, and she says, oh, I'm so glad you didn't go. You would have killed somebody.
You would have murdered somebody.
I would have strangled them with my hands. Chair yoga, are you fucking kidding me? I want to talk pledges. I want to talk special offers. I want to talk about where we're going with merch for merch. Chair yoga?
Yeah.
Really? Really? So, chair yoga? I'm getting mad just sitting here thinking about it.
I know, and this is why it comes back to you've got to know what your role is when you're designing something like this. What business you're in. Know what business you're in. And just like we advise to cartoonists, know the genre, the mood, the tone, the tenor of the business you're in as a cartoonist. I worry a lot, of probably more than I should, about how Patreon is trying to be or do something they are not. They have a brilliant core business model, which is connect an artist to their audience, take a percentage of that cut, bam, you're done, right?
Right.
And I get nervous anytime one of these weird ideas like merch for membership with all the weird warehousing and product pricing that's going to have troublesome with that too, or loans for artists, which is just a regulatory nightmare and is a bad idea because it's not smart and don't do that. And then a Patreon assembly where it's like, let's bring in A-list stars to talk about things that aren't really about Patreon. And I just get concerned because they have a core business that is brilliant.
Yes.
And I feel like they are very much trying to outgrow into different things because they have to meet that VC capital at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually that piper's got to be paid. And so they're desperately trying to grow and be something else. When unfortunately their core business model is great. Just stick to that.
Yes.
But it's never going to be as gangbusters as their VC capital wants it to be. So they're trying all this other stuff. And I worry about that because the core business model serves the average cartoonist very well. And I worry when they try to add these weird bells and whistles or be something that they're not, you know?
And meanwhile, all they got to do is listen to me from a couple shows back and just pivot into Kickstarter, put in a pro-labor stance in their contract, and boom, they're going gangbusters again.
Yeah. But listen, in kindness, I got to say, I know, have met and have talked to at length 5 to 10 people in the upper ranks of Patreon. They are all nice people. They are all well-meaning people. They're really trying to do the right thing. And I say that sincerely. They are trying to do the right thing. And I understand the desire to widen the net of who these Patreon meetups can reach, right? Because a starting artist can't afford to fly to Los Angeles. They can't afford to fly to Brooklyn. And so if you do a live streaming event, great, goes out to more people. I just think there is, it betrays who you want to be when you're paying A-list stars to come talk for an hour in LA, rather than have Patreon success stories. Talk about, here are the 10 things that I did, bang, 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 that you, and maybe you can apply 4 of those to your own career, right? Which is what PatreCon assembly was, or PatreCon was for us last year, which was, hi, you've never met us before. We're the Try Guys. Here's the 10 things you can do. Or, you know, hi, I'm the lead social media outreach person for Amanda Palmer. Here's the things we do in the Amanda Palmer team that's helpful with Patreon. Bam, 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 bam. Hi, we're the representatives from Bonjuro. Here's what we do to help you with your business. Hi, we're the representatives from Simplecast. You know, all the different people that and stakeholders that they brought together last year, that was really helpful to me. I thought that was great.
Right.
And granted, I also know that I'm speaking here from a point of privilege. I'm an artist that has, quote unquote, made it, right? I have a studio. I have a wonderful employee. We're making comics. Things are going great. And so Patreon is also trying to reach the person that's just starting out. But the problem is that person should also be looking at how Patreon can best be used to grow from 5 patrons to 10, from 10 to 50, right? They shouldn't be talking. Right. They shouldn't be presented with an A-list celebrity who's going, your dreams are the future that you've yet to achieve. You know, doesn't necessarily help them. There are enough inspirational talks out there. They need to know from Patreon how to best use Patreon, not how to best be an artist and you know, chase your rainbows till you find your pot of gold, whatever that is.
Well, that's, I said I wanted to go circle around back to inspirational, and this is a good segue to do it because, those kind of things are bullshit. And really, what we should be doing is focusing on how do I get from 5 patrons to 10 and so forth. But I got a real problem with having somebody up there who is like, well, I've got 23 million YouTube subscribers and I can't feel happiness. Or, you know, having somebody like an A-list celebrity saying, boy, celebrity sure is tricky. And every time I see something like that, and I see people responding to it, like, there was so many people. And again, just because it wasn't for me doesn't mean that it was bad. I want to make very careful I say that. But I get a little bit nervous when I see the strong, visceral response to that. Because I saw a lot of people applauding very, very strongly for some of these, quote, inspirational presentations. Because every time I see something like that, I think about that John Steinbeck quote. He said, socialism never took root in America because the poor see themselves not as an exploited proletariat, but as temporarily embarrassed millionaires. And when I see somebody who
that's true.
Oh, yeah. That's a great, it sums up a lot of attitude. But when I see somebody applauding the 23 million YouTube subscriber, it's not, what the real inspiration is, someday that's going to be me, and someday I'm going to have these problems. And the problem with that is, unless you can focus on going from 5 to 10 patrons and from 10 to 20 patrons, you're never going to be in that situation. And trying to live vicariously through this YouTube star and dream that someday it's going to be you might be a nice daydream, but it's not actionable, and it's useless at the end of the day. It's not getting you to where you need to go. And that's the problem I've got with that. I don't even think calling it inspirational is accurate, because all it is kind of telling yourself, well, that's going to be me someday. I don't get that attitude.
Oh, I see. So you're saying that it's actually doing a disservice.
It's actually a disservice, because that's fine to say, well, someday I'm going to be famous. We all have those daydreams. But to codify it and to make it part of your presentation, I think is not great. And again, maybe it's just because I am who I am. I want to see a whole lot more towards the instructional, a little bit of inspirational. And by the way, the 23 million YouTube subscriber that I keep kind of allegorizing, I'll tell you why else I don't like that, and why I'll be honest, I fully reject it. I don't want to hear from her. You know why? I want to hear from the woman that gets up there and says, I had two kids. I didn't know where the rent was going to come from next month. And I had got a water shut off, and doing stuff on Patreon helped me to turn things around. And this is how I did it. That is inspirational. And by the way, I will insist that person exists. A lot of versions of that person exist. That's the inspiration I want to hear from. That's the woman I want to hear up there talking about what she did and how she did it. And I there's plenty to be inspired by that. That's the inspiration I want to hear. And they exist. And this other thing, it's all, to me, masturbatory.
Yeah. I love that was a five minute lead up just so you could use that word. That was good.
Well, I hadn't said anything sexual in about a show and a half, so I had to throw it in there.
No, here's the thing. Like, if I'm trying to be, because I want to balance this out with kindness. So if I'm trying to be kind about it, like, I'm imagining myself, I'm a VP of Patreon, and I'm vice president of outreach and creator development or something, right? I don't know what the title would be.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking to myself, how do I reach the most people while making it most impactful for the people it does reach? And I can see why they would say to themselves, well, every month we're doing these blog listings, we're doing these videos of like actionable how-tos, so let's do once a year a bigger inspirational talk. And I mean, I guess I could see how they arrived at that conclusion, mm-hmm. but to me, there is something wonderful, in the same way that I talked about the other day, how it's really effective have 20 minutes to focus on email rather than doing a little bit each day.
Mm-hmm.
There is something very effective about having an entire weekend focused on just actionable advice about Patreon. And so that's why I really responded to PatreonCon, because yeah. I could apply it slowly over the course of the year, but I had 48 hours of really learning about how to make actionable changes with my Patreon account at PatreonCon.
Yeah.
And Patreon Assembly felt more like, hey, here's a day of actionable inspiration about how the future is bright for art. And you're like, all right, it's great. There are TED Talks that do this. I don't need this, you know, that kind of stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna button this up with one last thought that occurred to me, and it's this. When psychologists get together for a seminar, they get together, and when they get into a room, somebody stands in the front of the room and they present a paper on behavioral modification and how that worked and how they applied it this year with some new technology, right, or whatever. They get up, and that's what they do that in the seminar. They have somebody get up and do a presentation with graphs and knowledge and information. And they do that because they're serious about what
right.
they're doing.
Right. Oh, I see where
and
you're going with this.
That's what I want to see. That's what I want to see. And by the way, that other stuff. Oh, gee, you know, I'm successful, but I'm having problems emotionally. It's tricky to be a celebrity. All this other stuff that happens at the bar afterwards, because you bet those psychologists are doing that. But they're not doing it on the freaking stage. They're doing it at the bar. They're saying, oh, yeah, I've got real problems with, handling, navigating this, navigating that. It's still happening, but it's not on the stage because they're serious about what they're doing. And the stuff that's actionable is happening up on the stage. The social stuff, the networking stuff, the emotional stuff is happening off stage. It's still valuable, but it's happening off stage. And that's a big difference to me between being serious about something and trying to find the emotional feel good aspect of something.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm really responding to this as a metaphor because when you go to, as I have gone to academic conferences, the papers and the presentations are all substantive on the topic. They are all, to rephrase, actionable things that were done on history or on literature. But you don't get someone standing up going, ha, it's tough to be a history teacher, gang. I got to tell you. Because the purpose of the seminar is, here is the work. Here is the work and how it is done. Here are the results of the work. Now, does that mean that in the course of that weekend conference of academics, there's not a talk about like troubles being an academic or, you know, emotional hiccups and how to get past them? Of course there is that. Yes, there's a place for that. And there's a place for that at a Patreon weekend of seminars too. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Brett and I aren't arguing that. But don't make the whole weekend that, you know? And I, you know what? Right. Also too, there were... I know that I shouldn't be this grumpy, but Brad, at one point there was a band playing, and great, good for the band. I love it. Hey, good for you, you're musicians. I love it. I'm not coming to listen to a band. I'm coming to learn about how I do Patreon better. So, listen, the place to have that band play is at the bar meetup afterward for Patreon.
At the bar,
Patreon
afterwards.
Had an open bar.
Yes.
That's where the band should play. That's great. Good for you. You're a band. You're doing great. It's not like anyone's inviting Dave Kellen up on stage to draw live because no one wants to see that because no one needs to see that. It's a Patreon event. Let's learn about how to use Patreon. You know, I don't need to see how a sculptor chisels away stone or wood. Let's just talk about Patreon. Anyway, I'm an angry person this morning, I guess. You know why?
Now you're getting
I'm mostly frustrated because I saw how good it could be last year. Like if you go back, and I would love for people to go back and re-listen to that episode last year. And we'll have it in the show notes which episode that was. But you can feel and sense Brad and my excitement because we came away with 1,000 actionable ideas. We had networked. We had met a bunch of companies that are Patreon adjacent because they were there as well. We had seen and heard and actually talked to artists that were walking the walk and talking the talk about how they were applying their Patreon to their art and their business. And so really go back and listen to that episode because PatreonCon last year was amazing and full of actionable ideas that you should incorporate into your own business.
Yeah. Just go back to that month on Patreon for Comic Lab. And not only were we talking about it for the next show or the next several shows and the next several pro tips episodes, but we were doing posts where we were sharing. You shared your notes from PatreonCon. You scanned them and uploaded them. We were so fired up. There was so much value for what that PatreonCon had been. We posted for days. There might have been a dozen posts all told with that topic or information that we had gotten from that. The show is right now hosted, Comic Lab is hosted by Simplecast because we met them at PatreonCon and were so impressed by what they were doing, we ditched our old host and went to Simplecast. And by the way, Simplecast has been a great decision for us. It was another good thing that came from PatreonCon.
Right. And so definitely go have a look at my notes from last year and listen to the shows from last year because it was a great example of what a Patreon seminar weekend can be. And for my own two cents, I hope that they steer it back towards that because it was great. It was a hit, and unfortunately, this year was a miss, and I'm a little bit saddened by it. And in friendship, I want to encourage them to if I can come in and talk, I'm happy to. I'll jump on the phone We've talked in the past about stuff.
Yeah.
Over Patreon. Because it's a worthwhile idea. Get the artists together, get the best of the best together to talk about what they do right. Share resources, share companies, share, you know, assets. And, it was a great idea and I'd love to see them go back to it.
Absolutely.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics.
So Bradley J, this episode and all the rest of the episodes for 2019 are brought to us by the good folks over at Wacom at WACOM.com. And I want to talk to you, Brad, because one of the things that Beth and I have discovered in the studio with two different Cintiqs on either side of the studio is that Wacoms are delightfully customizable. You know, all the physical manual buttons, all the buttons on the pen, you can have it do everything that's specific to you. So I like an eraser a certain way. I like to be able to raise or lower the width of my line very quickly on my side swiper. So I have it just the way I like it. But then have you ever sat down at someone else's Cintiq and tried to use theirs?
Oh, it's really weird. It's like when you sit down in somebody else's car, immediately you got to adjust the seat. You got to adjust the mirror. You got to do a lot of adjusting.
It's so funny because Beth and I, we're oftentimes working on the same file and we'll pass it back and forth via Dropbox across the studio, that kind of thing. And she'll go, okay, have a look at this. Do you like this version better? And I'll go, let me adjust that background texture a little bit. And I'll sit down in her chair to go do it. I'm like, what are these crazy settings? What human being? And then later on, the file's back on my computer. And I'll be like, well, I don't know. You draw it the way you were thinking of. And she'll grab my pen and try to. And she's like, what are these erasing settings? Who would do it this way?
What kind of sick psychopath uses an eraser like this?
What strange madness has taken hold of you? But that's, in a way, it's the great blessing of how customizable those things are.
Yeah.
But it's funny when you swap out, you realize that the settings that you assume are quote-unquote normal, any other artist in the world is like, these are crazy. These are crazy settings for a crazy person.
Who works like this?
What monkey set up your system? Because, are you throwing bananas? What's happening? Anyway,
boy, Wacom is so happy they're sponsoring this show.
No, but what's great though is that I have it set up after 20 years of drawing on a Wacom, perfect. Like literally, no perfect. I don't even have to think about it anymore. It's become second nature. It flows directly out of my pen, and that's beautiful. It's like you know when you've to translate it to being a kid. You know how you could do tricks on your bike because you had been riding that bike for 4 years and it was like second nature to you? That bike, you knew every bolt on that bike. You had fixed every chain on that bike and you knew it perfectly. And that's the way I feel about my Cintiq, is that like I don't even have to think about drawing certain things. They just literally flow out of my pen now. And however, when I go to somebody else's Cintiq, it's like I've walked into crazy town because nothing makes sense.
Well, now finally, one thing about your Wacom makes perfect sense. I always wondered why you had a little clothespin with a baseball card affixed to the side of your Cintiq.
Well, I like the as I draw. It brings me back to Beaver Cleaver. What was the town that Beaver Cleaver grew up in? Do you know?
You should have went with Mayberry. I could have answered that question.
I'll just say Mayberry. It brings me back to Mayberry. Anyway, so we thank Wacom for sponsoring us this week because over at WACOM.com, they are a delightful part of our studios. Regardless of my ability to jump on somebody else's Wacom, they are a delightful part of my own cartooning creation. And Bradley J., what is our next question, my friend?
Well, as long as you're talking about bike tricks, I thought maybe I'd give you a question about art tricks. All right. This one comes up from our Patreon backer and good friend, Alexi, who says, I was curious to know what are some of the recommendations you could give on efficient ways to learn new techniques and skills, maybe things you've tried that you found out just don't work for you or things that really do work for you. In other words, Dave, when you're trying to pick up a new skill, how do you do it? You've only got so much time. You can't go too far afield. How do you do efficiently learning a new trick?
Oh, wow. This is like an question, like you are question.
Because yeah.
This is how do you learn how to learn, basically.
Right.
Wow. All right. How do I learn a new trick? How do I learn? So the way that I approach it is I try to learn from, mimic, and copy from the best until I have internalized how they do it. And when I say internalize, what I mean is I've copied and mimicked and repeated their process so many times that my body has now internalized it, made it my own, and my hand has actually put a spin on it, put a style on it.
Yep.
So now it is distinctly mine. Someone seeing me do it would not go, oh, you stole that from Brendan, or oh, you stole that from David Lowe, or oh, you stole that from Bill Watterson. They would be like, oh, that's the way Dave draws a rock. How interesting. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I do that. And then, frankly, and this is more of a late stage career privilege, if someone is really good at something, I will call them up and go, hey, Brad, you're really getting a great line art, line quality. What brushes are you using? How are you doing this? Or I'll call up Jake Parker and say, how are you getting that pencil quality on the, what paper are you using? Or I'll call up Laura D'Souza and say, like, hey, how are you cutting out background texture on your artwork for this or that project? Mm-hmm. Right? And again, that's a late stage career privilege where when you've met enough people at Comic Cons and you can go directly to them. So the more helpful answer is to say that literally I copy and I try to copy from the best. And I mimic and I repeat the process until I have internalized it and made it my own. But Brad, what is your answer? How do you learn a new trick?
That's a great answer. So I'm going to come at it a little bit different angle. And that is to say that we all learn things differently. So if I were to tell you how I learn something and I say, well, I like to watch YouTube videos, which, by the way, would be a complete lie. But let's say I said that. If you can't stand watching a YouTube tutorial, that's not going to be useful information for you. Same thing if I were to say, well, I really like reading about it and then doing it. Or I need to have somebody talk me through it, or I need hands-on experience. Your way of learning is uniquely you, so I can't give you advice on that. Right. However, there is one thing I did and one thing that I continue to do that remains very, very effective and extremely efficient. And that is every time I've tried to pick up a new technique, I went 100% on it immediately. In other words, when I decided to go from Photoshop to Clip Studio Paint, I decided on a Friday that Monday's comic was going to be done in CSP. And I had a horrible weekend. But then by Monday, I had to put, I made it my point in my job to have that comic done. There was going to be no avoiding it. And I got that comic done. And I take the baptism in fire path.
Yeah.
And I've done that a couple of different times where I just threw the switch and said, okay, I'm making the decision to do this. It's by the way, the same exact way that I went from doing pen and ink to doing Photoshop on a Wacom Cintiq in the first place. It's the way that I went from doing digital lettering to hand lettering for a year to teach myself that. I just said on a Friday, starting Monday, I'm going to do it this way, and I'm just going to have to figure it out. And the first several maybe aren't going to be very good, but that's a part of the process. And if they're horrible, I can always maybe go back and clean them up or do better. But I really have, in several times during my life, got an awful lot of benefit out of saying, I'm just going to do it and I'll figure it out along the way. I'll make the decision Friday and Monday we're going for it. And it has worked out. Believe me, when you commit to doing something like this. Again, you're going to have a few bad days. It's going to really hurt. It's going to really be uncomfortable. You're way outside of your comfort zone.
Right.
But when you force yourself to do it, you also force yourself to find solutions. You force yourself to learn.
Yeah,
I got to figure out how to do this.
Yep. Forcing yourself to find solutions is a good way to describe that. Yeah.
Yes, it brings in the necessity is the mother of invention clause, right? You say, okay, I'm doing hand lettering now. Great. Now, okay, I've got to figure out how to use an Ames lettering guide. I got to figure out why my O's look bad. Okay, I've got to make them a little bit bigger and dip them below the baseline a little bit. You do a lot of learning on the fly out of necessity. And that's how I picked up a lot of skills and did it way quicker than if I would have, you know, tiptoed around YouTube tutorials and all this other stuff. I just jump in with both feet.
Yeah. So counterpoint on that. I do agree with Brad that there are times where if I'm trying to figure out how to do, say, a certain bit of woodworking, right? Like I just got to spend the weekend and figure out how to make the cut. Like I don't know how to do it. But then there's other types of things where I benefit from using time as an editor, you know, if I'm learning a new trick. And so point counterpoint to Brad's idea of diving right in. Sometimes if you do things in little bursts, give it a couple days, review what you did, and then with a critical eye, because time has become an editor for you, you go, oh, I see what I was doing wrong. I was making the line too heavy. And then you give it a couple more days, you try it again. You give it a couple more days, look at that and go, oh, nope. All right, now I've made my line too thin. And you know what I mean? You course correct, Brad, because your editorial eye on whatever new trick you're learning is being aided by the fact that you are not emotionally as connected to the physical work that you just did. It's now 3 days ago, Brad, and you're able to go, well, I see why Brad drew it that way, but I'm going to change up how Brad now.
Yeah.
So I've used that with good effect on some things too.
Yep. No, I totally get that. And that has an awful lot of value. My only thought about that is if you end up doing that, set a calendar. In other words, you can do that for so long. But then at some point you can go into one of those analysis paralysis cycles and never get anything done too. You know, sometimes doing it that way, you're never actually going to throw the switch. In other words, let's say you're talking about going from Photoshop to Clip Studio Paint, and you're taking that approach. Well, you could get into a situation where you could say, well, geez, I've been talking about going from Photoshop to Clip Studio Paint for a long time now. I just never have done it. I've just got to throw the switch. And if you get to that point, then say, okay, that's it. Yeah. I'm doing it.
And that's why I say it's not an argument against. I'm in no way arguing against. I'm just saying some situations are benefit from a shorter burst. But to Brad's point, there's a lot of situations that benefit from a big intensive burst.
And there might be a situation where you take a look at Dave's way of doing that and you say, oh, wait a minute, this is going to work for me a lot better. I'm going to be more comfortable doing it. The other thing there too is that you've got a lot of different personalities and a lot of different artistic approaches. My way might not work for you at all. You might listen to what Dave's saying and go, nah, that's more me. Or you might be just the opposite.
And frankly, if it's a truly big problem, a big quote-unquote trick that you're trying to learn, like a CSP, the truth is you're probably doing a mixture of both of them, is the honest truth. You go in intensively, but then Brad is still learning CSP in short bursts every day now going forward, right?
Another thing that I want to
approach here is that a thing that I often do when I'm trying to learn a new thing, whether it's like, I got to figure out how to lay out a book in InDesign, I've got to learn how to really manipulate a vector line in Illustrator, whatever it is I'm trying to learn. I approach it, Brad, with the idea of documentation. Like, I always try to write stuff down, both so that me three hours from now remembers what the hell it was I did 3 hours earlier, but also because the act of writing it down is itself a mnemonic to remember what it was that you did and how to do it again, right? And so I would also advise, because I'm pretty sure there's been a lot of studies on this, that if you physically write it down versus typing it, you get a better mnemonic in the brain about the hand-brain connection of memory. And so it writes it a little bit deeper as a memory into your brain. So I would often advise to hand note your learning process rather than type note your learning process. But also, like an IT person, do really good documentation on what you're doing, how you're doing it, what your approach was, what you tried and failed, which is also helpful. Like, you know what? I'll give you an exact example of this, Brad. When Beth and I were trying to figure out how in God's name to fulfill the Amazon advantage, we created a how-to doc. This is the pages you go to. Because Amazon does not make it easy. So we literally created our own documentation for it. And so that's a common way that I learned. But any other last thoughts, Brad? Any other last thoughts on how you learn a new trick?
No, that's I love your documentation idea. And I would just add that if you're thinking, well, how am I going to import that into what I'm already doing? Remember, you've always got a sketchbook sitting there nearby. I'll put these notes right into my sketchbook. Like I've got kind of a system set up in my sketchbook where the top corners of the pages, I usually leave a little bit blank so that I can fill them in with just little notes about what's going on, what you know, the ideas that are left over or things that I'm working on. So that later on when I'm looking for something, I can just flip through that book and just look at those page corners and find stuff that I know is not necessarily a storyline or writing or a sketch, but is more like, oh, okay, a few months ago, I started uploading social media a little bit different, and here was my thought on that. And this was the date I started it, so I can go back through my analytics and see, oh, yeah, that did have a big effect. You know, everything went down. Time to change again. A new note.
No, but that's a good button on that. Thank you. So on that note, I'm going to switch us over to the next question, Brad, and I will ask this one of you. This comes in from our friend Alexander from Norway, who says, hi, guys. Would you ever consider doing a project just for fun with no financial gain? Inktober, for instance, or something that you don't even share online. Thanks for making a great podcast. So, Brad, a question from Alexander, from our friend from Norway. Would you ever do a project just for fun?
Yeah, Norway. Great. This is coming from Norway. You can do stuff for fun. You've got your healthcare paid for you. Of course.
Brad takes a shot at his own country there. Wait, good job. Right. Here in the...
We're here in the United States. My healthcare plan for a long time was planned not to get sick. I'll be honest with you. Maybe I'm just an old grump, but no, I don't do. Not only would I not do anything just for fun or that would not be published. To me, publishing is as much a part of making a comic as inking, penciling, and lettering. And social media. That's part of why I do it, is the publishing part. And commerce is, because of the world we live in, a intrinsic part of that. So no, I wouldn't. To me, that question is just as foreign as if you would say, hey, Brad, would you ever consider doing a comic without inking it? You'd pencil it and letter it and social media and publish, but you just wouldn't do the inking. Or you could letter it, but you wouldn't do the G's. Well, no, I wouldn't letter it and not do the G's. G's is a part of lettering. G's. It's a part. And by the way, one last thing, and then I'll stop filibustering. One last thing. Who says... He says, would you do it just for fun? I'm having a lot of fun. I'm having a ridiculous amount of fun. Everything that I do in comics has an element of fun. I bristle when somebody says, oh, it'd be fun to be a cartoonist all day. And it's like, well, okay, try doing this and doing it at a level where people are actually willing to pay for it. And it takes a little bit of the fun out. But there is a joyfulness there. There's a fun aspect to making social media work correctly. There's a fun aspect to running a successful Kickstarter and to fulfilling that. It's a challenge, and I like the challenge. I really need the challenge in a lot of ways. So I kind of also reject that what I'm doing isn't fun to a certain extent, because I do really live for that challenge. But that was my first blush when I heard you read that question. Is that doing everything that's involved with doing a comic, it also involves the publishing part. and the part where you make money happen later. That's a part right. of the that's part of the deal. Comics have always been commerce related. What do you think, Dave?
Well, my answer to this question, Brad, is when I was a child, I spoke like a child, thought like a child, and reasoned like a child. And when I became an adult, I put away childish things. So that's my answer to that. No.
Was that now what was that? What that's what quote is that from? Where's that
that's,
from?
Corinthians. Wait, what did you think it was? Mickey Mouse? What?
I was hoping you'd say Corinthian, and then I had a nice little Ricardo Montalban joke about requesting nothing beyond thickly cushioned luxury of seats in fine Corinthian leather, and that was going to be my
By
Corinthian.
By the way, I know that it's 30 years on, but the sheer balls of Chrysler to come up with the phrase Corinthian leather and then try to sell it. Like it was a real thing. There has been no finer moment in marketing. The fact that they tried to sell that bullshit, like, it's Corinthian leather. You're like, wait, what is Corinthian leather? That's just a cow from Texas.
Yeah. And they got Ricardo Montalban. Yeah, and you believed it because it was Ricardo Montalban. It was Mr. Rourke telling you this stuff.
Oh, my
you
God.
Know?
There's nobody smoother on this earth than Ricardo Montalban. So everyone's like, oh, wow, Corinthian leather.
I know. But that was going to be my Corinthian quote.
So my real answers are actually very similar to Brad. The reason why I quoted that Corinthian thing is that in large part, one of the reasons you survive 20 years of a cartooning career is by maintaining a survivor attitude. And that is, okay, I've got to make money. I've got to work.
Yeah.
The artist that I know, and this is just a side story. I have known artists who have sold a screenplay. Bada bing, bada boom. Suddenly it's $150,000, $200,000. That came into their bank account. They sold the screenplay. Ha, amazing. Great. Woohoo. I'm quitting my job working as a waiter. This is literally a friend of mine. Quit my job as a waiter. Well, they spent that money real quick, and then they had to get the job as a waiter again, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not joking. That actually happened. And then, by the way, a version of that story has happened to friends of mine in Los Angeles 10 or 15 times. And I'm not joking. I'm not minimizing how many times it's happened. Where because you have to always maintain a tiny bit of your brain that's going, where's the next paycheck? How am I going to make my living 12 months from now, 18 months from now, 24 months from now? The reason why you survive is that you're always kind of thinking with a business hat, in addition to always being an artist, right? So that's why I jokingly quoted Corinthians there, because you have to, it's not just childish fun time. You have to be like, all right, how am I translating my joy for comics into a livable wage, right?
Yeah.
And that's why, in part, Brad and I get frustrated by artists who can't do a Kickstarter, can't do Patreon, because you have to be willing to say, my art has value. My art, which brings you joy, should have some small recompense. And maybe you consider, buying a book or joining Patreon or this or that, right? Because art has value in the world. It genuinely saves people in dark moments of their life and lifts them up through tricky moments and buoys them through even the happy moments. So art has value, right? But so that's answer number one. Right. Is I take it very seriously. Answer number two is exactly what Brad said, is that I am not digging a ditch, for God's sake. I'm having fun. I literally tweeted last night, breaking news. I have tremendous fun with the physical act of cartooning. I love doing it. I feel such a tremendous sense of physical and soulful joy when I'm drawing, or when I'm able to share my ideas with the world.
Yeah.
Or then when I'm able to take my ideas from 18 months ago and put them into a physical book, and then I get mailed these physical copies of this object that I get to send all around the world to share with people. That's an amazing life. I love that. And so my joy...
Right.
They always say, find a job that you love and you'll never work a day in your life. Now, don't get me wrong. I work every day of my life, but I'm joy-filled doing it. I love what I do. Right, Brad?
Right. Right. No, you're absolutely right. And that's, I mean, we like Jake Parker. I would never say anything bad about Inktober. And I see the value in Inktober. I would never do Inktober.
Well, Brad, and this is worth discussing. The reason why you wouldn't do it is because you already do it.
Yeah. That was my joke. It's like, okay, it's Inktober where we're going to do a drawing every day of the month, or as I like to call it, Tuesday.
Right. See, and that's why the brilliance of Inktober for Jake and for having brought it into the world is that for literally millions of people now, Inktober is their excuse to go, no, you know what? I do like art. I want to pick up that pen again.
Yeah.
And here is a construct that allows me to emotionally say, yes, I would like to draw again. I'm going to do Inktober, right? And there's a billion reasons for all the people that are on the planet. There's a reason why they put down the pen and stop drawing. And October is a brilliant way to get them drawing again. But I will say this, Brad and I, we work day in, day out on comics. And so it's both joy-filled because we love to do it, but it also is with a purpose, which is to get it out into the world, to make people happy, to share a story or share a joke. And then in turn, the expectation is I will also make a living on it. So we do 10 other things around the art to make sure that that happens so that next week we can still be a cartoonist and not have to go back and get the waiter job again, you know?
Exactly.
So it's a virtuous circle of joy and effort and planning and joy and effort and planning and joy and effort and planning.
Yeah. And again, I will assert all of that is part of comics. Comics have always been commerce related. Comics were originally created to help sell newspapers and to be a part of the communication of newspapers. That's the root of comics. It was commerce based. And they very quickly, by the way, found out that people bought newspapers for the comics. They were a driving factor in those sales. So to come 100 years or so later and try to separate that is a little disingenuous. This has always been comics has always been related to making a sale at some point.
So I got to tell you a story, Brad. This was 8 or 9 years ago. No, it wasn't 9 years. It was 7 years ago. The last time my family went on vacation, we went to Hawaii, right? And I'm sitting by the pool, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take a break. I'm on vacation. I'm just going to draw for fun. And this is a fun little insight into Dave's mind, right? I'm just going to draw for fun. In fact, I brought this watercolor kit. I'm going to teach myself some watercoloring techniques. So I'm fiddling around. Nice. I'm fiddling around with salt and watercolor and trying to do different things. And, oh, this is fun. I'm doing this. Second one, I draw it a little bit better. Third one, I draw, oh, hey, this is fun. I'm getting better at working with salt and watercolor. Hey, fun. Okay, cool. And then I come home from Hawaii, Brad. All three of them go up on eBay. All three of them. So the things that I did, quote unquote, for fun, I found a way to make a living off of them. I sold all three.
I was just waiting for the, in the fourth one, there's a little duck in the corner, and the fifth one that he just starts going, pretty soon it's just the duck with a little bit of a sunset behind him.
And in the fifth one, I drew a price tag in there. That's weird.
That's just mini pearl, ultra colossa.
Well, when was the last time, Brad? Let me ask you this. When was the last time, because I think the Hawaii time might have been the last time. When was the last time you mentally sat down and said, I'm going to draw something for fun? And don't include in here, there's a back of an envelope and you're on the phone. When was the last time you sat down and drew for fun?
If I tell you that I can't remember, will you think I'm bullshitting you?
No, because I excluded back of envelope and you're on the phone, which might
no,
be.
No, and I don't even do that. I don't now that I'm thinking about it, not so much. No, I can't remember a time. If I've got pen to paper, I'm working out an idea or I'm working out a storyline or I'm trying to refine how to draw this person from a certain angle. It's all built into what I'm doing.
Well, and let me take two different aspects of why this might not happen for Brad and I think this will make more sense. One is, whenever I have something new and quote-unquote fun that I want to draw, Brad, and I think I could speak for you too, I work it into the strip, whether it's Sheldon or Drive or something else. It's not just a standalone like, oh, hey, I wanted to learn how to draw an armadillo. I do an anatomy of an armadillo, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, I make it an actionable cartooning moment of like, no, I'm going to do a thing around it. It's not going to be a wasted drawing because I have learned that it's both joy filled and it's worthwhile to make it part of my process.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And also vice versa. It not only that, but it's like you might not have done anatomy of an animal to do an armadillo, but you learned how to draw armadillos through doing anatomy of an animal. And that might not have been
the worst thing in the world. Yeah.
I keep calling it anatomy of an animal. Like the book just has one page.
And the second part of my answer to this is that one of the reasons why I don't draw for fun, and this is also coming from a point of feeling very blessed about it and feeling privileged in my art career, mm-hmm. is that I have, and this is not a joke, 5 or 6 projects on my back burner, some of which I mentioned in the goals episode, some of which I didn't even mention because they're so far out, where I want to get to those someday. So I'm excited and, again, joy-filled to draw those. I don't have time to waste on, like, today I'm going to draw a silly little frog. Whee! Because it's like, I want to get to the big project that I have planned, you know, whether it's the screenplay I have idea for, or whether it's finishing Drive, or whether it's Sheldon, or whether it's this or that. And so, again, it's coming from a point of feeling both blessed in my career and privileged that I get to do this. But I got stuff I want to do, so get to it, because life is short. So that's, again, that's the point. Part of this makes me feel like it makes me sound joyless that I don't just draw for fun, but it actually comes from a place of joy that I want to draw for with purpose, you know?
Yeah. No, I absolutely right. I couldn't agree with you more. And that's why we should probably get back to drawing. What are we doing podcasting? That's it. Show's over. You've been listening to Comic Lab. The show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my joy-filled friend, Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the delightful cartoonist of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And Dave, don't panic, that's not a rubber band. Kellett, co-director of Stripped. And cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drive.com, at drivecomic.com.
It's okay, we've only been doing it 2 years. The Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net, and this episode and all episodes was edited by the delightful Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media. And today's show, as a reminder, sponsored by the good folks over at Wacom at WACOM.com.
Comic Lab is made possible by your support on Patreon.com/Comic Lab, so we'll go ahead and say that twice. Patreon.com/Comic Lab.
Brad, I'm getting flashbacks. No, don't do it. Don't do it. Also, that was another thing. Like, when you're 11 and you hear the blood-curdling screams of a full bull, it's not what you want. You run like hell. That's what you do. You run like hell.
No, yeah, I don't blame you. I would have ran, too.
2,000, 3,000 pounds of muscle just pulling a barn down around you with a solid metal chain. You bet your bippy I'm running back up to the farmhouse. I'm not sticking around. I'm no dummy. I got a cartoon to make.
How the hell am I going to run with my knees clenched together?